Greetings, mortals. You are listening to Bourbon and Barbarians, an actual play recording presented by the Chromcast.
So I recall that we are in a hallway and we opened, I see 1, 2, 3, 4 doors. We opened one of those doors. It looked like it was a bunkhouse, and there was a latrine in there. Then we went back into the hallway, and after that, I don't remember if we opened any more doors.
So,
I don't think we did open those last door, the last two doors.
I don't know. There are three more doors, according to my notes, but I don't know.
So you opened one door.
Yep.
Wherein Mike found, when rifling through miscellaneous old bed mats and footlockers, a funky mask with a human teeth. Do you remember that?
Yes, mm-hmm. I do remember that.
Thereafter,
I have a death cult mask.
Yep, there you go. So you found a death cult mask. Thereafter, you found the latrine, and that was a room that was empty except for a big hole in the ground that stank like old poo.
Right. Not new poo.
Yeah, I mean, it was dusty and musty, and it wasn't like there were splatter nasties on the edges. It was that there was clearly an old, long past use latrine that you'd stumbled upon.
Yeah.
We also opened the door because we found the musical notes that we wanted to make sure that we played on the piano.
Yep, and so that's where we left. So that was actually in the last room that I have notes that you all entered into. And so this room seems to be, I guess the best way to describe it would be like the room where slaves would have been held, because you found like spots where chains would be like linked into the walls, and you found a variety of old rusty leggings and some various like ruined mats and like shattered pots and stuff. Like the things that are in here don't look as nice as the things that were in the other room wherein Mike found the mask.
Was that room? Right? Yeah, I remember that. I don't remember what side of the hallway it is.
So all of the rooms that you have explored are on the eastern side of the hallway or the right hand side if you were like going upwards.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. And there are a couple doorways on your left that you would have passed, like okay. or have encountered by torchlight mm-hmm. as you've explored.
Okay. And then there's a door at the end of this hallway that we're in.
This is right.
And we have not gone there.
That is right.
Okay.
Yep.
And I recall that when we left off, we had heard yet another crash from the room behind us.
Yeah, there have been a few of those.
I think there was 4 of them total.
That is correct.
I think that's right.
So, I know we kind of ended in disarray the last recording.
No, I think we're back in array now.
But I think we can say that we are in those slaves' quarters, and you have found the musical notation. Basically, what you found there, Mike, I recall you had found that, right?
Yes.
The music.
I believe so. But then we decided that
as a former circus folk, yes. I could maybe hum the notes.
Right. Okay. Yeah, and so
perhaps even play them on the piano.
Yeah, so what you see here is a musical notation for like a short. It's just like a handful of chords in sequence. The music notation, I mean, not that you're necessarily a musical whiz, doesn't exactly mesh with what you're like what you're familiar with as far as like dwarven mountain music, but you can get the sense that it's music notation, and the timing seems to be, and the changing across the scale seems to allow you to decipher at least kind of the overall like gestalt of what's here, right? And so what you're seeing here is something that's kind of like roughly carved into the wall, like near to one of the spots where like the leg irons would be bolted into the wall.
It sounds like the X-Files theme song.
Ooh, I was thinking the intro to Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, but X-Files is good too. Something nice and dissonant.
You're such a classicist.
I was thinking something by like Bathory or somebody. Okay. So are we ready to... it's not Bourbon Barbarians anymore. It's Mead and Monsters.
Ooh. I should start a rival podcast called that, just for shits and giggles.
You're going to start a rival to the podcast that you're on?
Yeah. I am keeping it real with bourbon, so...
We haven't had bourbon in a while, ever since the corn liquor took my soul away a few weeks ago.
Ever since the incident.
Okay.
The corn liquor incident of 18.
So I think we're caught up.
Yeah. Yeah, so you guys are in the quarters here. You are navigating by lamplight.
Torchlight. I have a torch.
I have a torch.
John has a torch.
So neither of you have lamps.
We have a lamp in the bag, but we've just been going with our torches.
Okay.
Yep.
Do we want to try to play this music before we go open any of these other rooms, or do we want to open the rooms first?
Let's see what is in front of us first.
Okay.
And then that way we have options.
Okay.
So according to my map, there is a door on the western side.
Mm-hmm. Like immediately across, like you come out of this door and there's one in front of you.
That's what I have. Yep. And then if we come out this door and turn immediately to the right, there's a door at the end of the hall that we haven't opened.
Yeah. Five or 10 paces forward. Okay. You can kind of see by the glimmer of torchlight that there's another door there.
Got it. So we have those two doors straight ahead and to the right. To the right is the end of the hallway, and across from us is, you know, just sort of a door along the way.
Might as well just do the one straight across, just so we don't... Because if the door at the end of the hallway leads to, like, more hallway...
Yeah.
You don't want to leave this one unopened behind us just in case.
I'm down with that.
Okay. So who's going up to the door? How are you entering?
I keep going first, so I'll go first.
Okay, so Alaric, you walk up to this door. Do you just push it open and enter?
Yep.
All right, so you do that. This door is like the others. There's nothing that would necessarily distinguish it. You're able to push it, and it swings freely and with very little sound. The flickering of torchlight from behind you illuminates what you can see to your right would be like a variety of marble tables and benches that seem to be lining that right wall. And ahead of you, you get just like the occasional like fluttery of light that illuminates like maybe a fire pit.
Okay.
Huh.
Seems romantic.
A fire pit?
Some candles.
And just in the center of the room?
Are you entering the room?
Well, I guess I'm just kind of looking over his shoulder, so okay. I wouldn't really be able to.
So if you come up behind him and you're sort of gazing over his shoulder and you see the flickering light illuminates what looks to be a fire pit on the edge of the far wall. So maybe it's more properly a hearth. It's not something that's in the center of the room. It's over on the sort of built into the wall.
Okay.
Does it look like, I guess I can ask when we get in, but I want to know if it's got like a chimney or a way for the smoke to exit. Suggestive that there's another exit to this crypt.
Shall we go in, Alaric?
We shall.
Okay, so we have the Preternatural and Alaric entering the room. This looks to be, I guess, a kitchen. Or at least a cookery area. The hearth that's illuminated has like a rotisserie sort of spit that spans what should be the open pit where you might be able to like slow roast a pig or something like that.
Do either of you have a hog in your bag?
I'll check.
No
hogs. Too bad.
The the marble tables and benches that are around it, you can see some rusty tongs and cutlery that are laid out there. This stuff is like long since use. I mean, decades, if not centuries, of non-use here. Mike, you inquired about ventilation. As you enter the room, you're looking for that, and it strikes you very odd that you see no clear chimney or vent for smoke to be sort of piped out of this room.
Are there ashes or coals in the fireplace?
If you go over and investigate, there's nothing there that suggests that a fire has burned in years. There's like black soot that stains and like the caking on of creosote, but there's not any sort of resemblance of like wood. There's like a mounding of ash, but the ash looks like so old that it's essentially like just a mound.
I wondered if maybe this was just an alcove for magical fires, but if there are if there's creosote, then I guess not.
Maybe stick your torch under there just to see. Like, presumably it's making a little bit of smoke. Maybe we can...
Yeah, I'll do that.
Just to see if it's going anywhere.
So you're waving your torch basically in the area looking for like where a flue or ventilation would be. Is that right?
That's right.
So you're doing that and you can sort of track the smoke stain up along the wall, and you make out it's relatively light, but there's at least one stone which looks to be less smoke stained than the others, which would suggest that this would be like the portion where like maybe the smoke would be filtering up.
Or there's a treasure hidden behind it.
Yeah, let's pry it out.
Well,
how about you do that, sword nerd?
Sword nerd.
Unless you want to try it.
No, I don't have the strength, but I'm fine.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get my dagger out then. And how high is this brick? Can I get it just by standing, or do I have to like drag something over or have like stand on somebody's back?
One of those two. And there's nothing readily available for you to drag. I mean, if you guys were working in concert, you could push a large table or something over. Either that or stand on somebody's shoulders. But it would be hard to... Like, you're not going to be able to reach it just with your naked arms.
I guess, Gregory, can I stand on your shoulders? You're taller than the dwarf.
The dwarf and I will cheerleader basket you up.
Okay.
If the dwarf if Alaric is willing.
Sir Brazon, go ahead and roll 3d6.
Okay. What am I trying to get under?
Just tell me what you get.
7.
Okay, so that's under your dex, I take it?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So
my dex is 10.
Yeah, so you're reaching up and you're able to sort of keep your balance. And are you using your dagger here? Is that what you mentioned?
Yeah, because, like, presumably, like, if I can get my dagger in among the crack and, like, try to pry this brick out, I might need some kind of leverage if my fingers can't, like, get around it.
So, yeah, so you can do that. The stone tile is relatively light. It's actually, like, it must be, like, some sort of slate. It's relatively light colored to have this stone, the stain on the stone, but it is, like, a slidable piece of slate, and you're able, with the momentum that you're getting here from like you're keeping your balance, you're able to sort of like push the stone slate over, and that reveals like an inky black maw above you.
Oh. Can I reach up and like put my hands into it? Like, is there a way to grab it?
Wait, yeah, absolutely.
Wait. No go. What? Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely can do that. As it stands right now, you're on their shoulders. They've got you like cheerleader sort of basket style, and you've sort of pushed that that slate to the side. And so as it stands, your hands are up there sort of inside the portal, and you're like holding yourself, and your fingers are sort of coming up over the lip. You could easily like, you know, do a pull up, sort of like hoist yourself into there.
I'm gonna do that and tell the guys, like, give me some light after I get up here. It's dark.
Hand it to him.
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah. Just like kind of, I don't know, put the torch up there so I can at least see a little bit, because I'm going into inky blackness.
It's okay. True.
Seems like a really safe thing to do.
I'm certain that this is a great idea.
Yeah.
I really am. This is amazing.
The light that's illuminating up, like, we have Alaric sort of like hoisting his torch up as high as he can reach. And so those flames are sort of like starting to lick towards the enter of the port, the entrance, the portal that you just came through, Berzon. So you're having to sort of like keep your head slightly askew so you're not getting like, you know, a little bit of tinge from the flames. But that is illuminating basically a very narrow bit of ductwork, and it's like stonework, right? So you are in a very narrow, tight, like flue that is connecting from the room that you're in, basically southwest from the direction of the room, which is to say away from the door.
Huh.
Yeah, it makes sense that if there are multiple fireplaces down here, that they would all sort of converge on the same central smokestack.
Can I see anything, or is it just like I can see that it goes kind of just off into the distance?
Well, you don't have any light source of your own, and from what you can see, it just goes off into the distance.
Okay.
I don't think there's necessarily anything special about this. I think it's just
a flu. Yeah, a flu. Can you hand me a torch just so I can make sure? I'm not going to crawl away, but I want to make sure I have the maximum light possible.
So I would picture this as we've lifted you. I mean, are you just holding yourself up gymnast style?
No, he is in the
I'm in the hole.
You're in the hole.
Okay. Yeah. Here we go. Here's the torch.
And so it would be hard for you to like pass off a torch to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the way that we would do that is you would have to like sort of toss the torch up a little bit.
I have candles.
Okay.
Is it just a distance thing that?
Yeah. I mean, you could do that. It's just like you would be like holding up a torch right into somebody's face. Like, right. How can he grab the flaming?
Right. So embers? I'll take a candle out of my pack.
Yeah.
And I have three of those.
Cool. Yeah, that's easily done.
So light it, and then hand it up sort of horizontally, so the flame isn't like right in his face.
Well, it's a candle. Like, it can't burn me that bad.
Yeah, that works.
It's a magical candle.
You could just as easily like throw the candle up there to him too.
It's a Roman
could
light candle.
It. Yeah, but that works.
It just starts going off.
So with a little bit of talking and planning and sort of working and reasoning this out, you're able to get a candle up into the flue with Berzon. All right, so you have a tea candle. A small tea light.
Okay.
You have this illuminated. You sort of get your butt in between the entrance that you came through, and you have the candle oriented towards deeper into the flue, and it's flickery. And as far as you can see, it's just a tunnel that leads forward.
Okay. No treasure then.
This is a soot stained smoke flue. Like there's nothing in here. It's like a stone sort of tunnel work.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm gonna blow the candle out and then drop back down out of the hole. Presumably I can do that with minimal effort.
No, yeah, you absolutely can. So you do that and you have like soot sort of covering your legs and your arms and your hands and maybe a little bit of your face as you wiped your brow to get the sweat off.
I'll recover my candle.
Yeah, I'll give it back. So this seems like we haven't seen anybody down here, but if we need like an escape route or something, we should keep this in mind. Like, I think we could scramble up here relatively quickly if we need to like get on out.
I think that's a bad idea, because if they light fires in the fireplaces and we climbed down pretty far, like at some point we're gonna have to. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that Grigory is gonna go up any flues.
What if it's the only option? We have an option.
There's always an option if you are valorous.
or preternatural,
or
right?
Preternatural.
I'm not gonna lie. If I was exploring this place on my own, I would just go down this flue. But I've got you two to deal with, so we'll keep going in the dungeon.
Okay.
You could live to sword nerd another day, so maybe that's a good idea.
Ah, there's nothing else of note in this room, really.
There's the various like cooking utensils that line the various tables. There's the spit that's across the fireplace. Mm-hmm. It's not like you see old foodstuffs or anything. The room is bare of the stuff that you would actually eat, but it seems as if all of the utensils that you might use for preparing a lot of that food are here.
Okay. I don't think I need any cookware. Do you guys?
No.
No, especially if it's old and rusted.
And moldy?
It's not so much moldy. It's dried, and you have flecks of rust and dark reddish residue that seem to be adhered to the various blades and files and saws that you see lining all of the various tables.
Residue.
Mm.
Okay. I'm personally, I think I'm finished with this room.
Yeah, I'm good too.
So you step back out into the hallway, and just to reiterate, you have the room that we began tonight's session directly in front of you. That is the slaves' quarters. There's an unopened door immediately to your left, which is more towards the keening wail that you've been hearing ever since you entered this dungeon. And to the right, it's the direction that you came, and there was actually a door that you passed on that entrance in that you did not open. But basically, there's the door that's immediately to your left that you can see, or the area that you came from.
I don't think we should go back yet. Let's look and see what's in this last door.
Okay.
Alaric?
Am I going first again?
Will you?
What?
Will you?
Of course.
You're valorous.
Alaric. I am the guide for this doomed expedition.
So Alaric.
I will take the opportunity to go first.
So, Alaric, you approach the door. This door looks like the others, and it is closed. Oh, you knock on it. Okay. The echo is resounding within the hallway. There's a little bit of the sound that carries.
I was creeping, guys. You want me to open it?
Yes.
Yes.
I push it open with my left hand.
Okay. So you push the door and it swings freely. As before, you have torch illumination over your shoulder. You can see there's something large and dark that's immediately within just a couple strides off to your left. It seems as if it's a large cylinder type workings on your left, and on the right you see like spans of metal.
Precious metal?
Perhaps. It's hard to see. It's relatively thin metal. It's almost as if it's like bending hoops and metal bars that are sort of like in a variety of arrangements. You can't see exactly what's there. It's not that it's a cage or anything like that. It's clearly a couple different curved hoops of metal that are at your height that are like out of shot. Like what you can see here is just like a little bit of like the glimmerings of the fire.
My height or their height?
Both. I mean, you're not too awfully short compared to them. Like you're
okay.
Like it would be head height for you certainly, but the metals are there.
I will go ahead and enter into the weird metal hoopering room.
Okay. So immediately to your left, you see dark like obsidian wheels or like large a millstone like laid over on its side, like a huge millstone, and that's what you see outside of having like additional light sources.
Cool.
You guys want to come in?
Yeah, I'll follow you in with the torch.
Okay, so as you all enter into the room, the torchlight begins to illuminate a variety of devices. So what you're seeing in here, immediately on your left, as I said, it was like the best way to describe it is like some sort of dark obsidian, like grinding or millstone, like wheel laid over on its side. So like think about a big tractor tire just like flipped over on its side. That's what you're seeing here. And as you look more closely, there's a central bit of stone, like an axle that comes out of the top, and it seems to be taking up a wide bit of real estate there on the left-hand side of the room. To the right, as you're moving your torch there, the hoops and the rings that you're seeing are, I guess it's like a spear. It's one of those types of iron hoops and rings that are in layers that are somewhat like a gyroscope. So it's kind of like one of those like spheres where you have multiple sets of hoops that are all on a central axis so they can all spin a variety of ways. And that is essentially like pinned in the ground like a globe. So that's something that's large enough that like a person could walk into it. And then immediately, like you didn't see it upon just looking into the room outright, but to your right, you see the equivalent of like a wheelbarrow or some sort of like large metal movable forge, like something that would have the ability to like stoke a fire and then also move it. So it's like a forge on wheels. Oh, and then I forgot to say it too. Immediately in the middle of the room is like a large book that's just like splayed open.
Wow, so, that seems something that Greg would be into.
Are there any exits from this room that are obvious?
Not that you can see.
And it's just so a big square, room.
It is relatively rectangular, so okay. It's wider than it is deep. But yeah, you got the general idea.
Okay. So we have the concentric spheres.
Mm-hmm.
We have some sort of a forge.
Mm-hmm.
We have some metal. This looks like a blacksmith's shop, perhaps.
Maybe.
Does the big, what, there's a name for those, like the globe thing. What?
Yeah. So you're racking your brain and you come up with it. It's actually termed an armillary sphere.
Okay.
That's the term that perhaps your boss, the mage, the scribe that you work for would use as far as what it is. Go ahead and roll, 3d6.
Okay. Is this a intelligence or wisdom or none of the above?
Either of those will suffice. If you get either under either of them, that'll be good.
They're the same. I rolled an 8, and both of those scores are 17.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, so you're gazing at this thing, thinking about it. This is almost like you get the sense that there are a series of like bulges within the hoops that seem a little bit familiar to you. This is the kind of thing that you might use to map constellations.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, right? So over astronomical time, various hoops would be moving in specific time intervals. So here's the funky part that slowly like comes to you and is disconcerting. As you're looking at some of those bulgy points that might perhaps represent like where constellations or planets might be aligned, there's also open parts that might fit around like say a hand or a leg, and it becomes apparent that this is a some sort of bizarre torture device wherein someone could be locked into this sphere and then twisted into some non-Euclidean arrangement so that they would be slowly twisted apart over astronomical time.
Oh my.
Huh. Is this something, is it small enough? Like, could we disassemble it and take it with us if we felt like it? Is this something you'd want to take back to your, like,
study? No way. It's man-sized, right? Like, it's like we could, any one of us and Alaric, maybe twice over, could go in and stand.
Right. I just wonder, like, maybe we could break it into like three big bits and carry it out.
I don't.
Sure. I mean, you could.
Maybe you wanted it.
No.
I don't know.
I don't want the evil torture device.
Yeah.
I recognize it at all as like a cult thing, like as a Wicker Man type situation?
No, the only person that's studying this nor considering it is the preternatural.
So he's like mesmerized by it?
Or? I mean, he's the only one that's realizing the information that I'm relaying.
I'll relay it to you guys. Like, and I'm going to take my 10-foot pole and like push one of the bands, one of the spheres to illustrate. Like, and if you put someone's hand here and someone's foot here and I'll turn it.
Mm-hmm. It glides effortlessly. And that's... that's unsettling, given that years and decades and perhaps centuries of time have passed without this thing being well-oiled.
That's WD-40.
It's moving silently.
This episode of Bourbon and Barbarians brought to you by WD-40.
WD-40, for when it doesn't need to squeak.
So I'll take one of them and move it to the opposite side and say, imagine if you put someone's hand here. And someone's foot here, and I'll move that to the opposite side. And another hand here, you get the picture.
This would be exquisite pain.
No tears.
Someone will be rended apart.
That's a waste of good suffering.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed with the effortlessness that it glides. We wonder how it does that.
So, the preternatural... you have your pole.
Yep.
You're pushing on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's moving as you're eloquating and as you're delivering this bit of information to your group. The starry alignments fuse for a brief moment, and it's as if like your senses, your mental acumen sort of like fixates on like some sort of arrangement that flashes for a moment, and it's like a brief bit of inspirato that you get. Like you get this moment of inspiration. And so go ahead, and I think you used one of your spells previously for the day.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you'll be able to gain back that spell slot.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Whoa. That's cool.
Let's all touch the magic torture device.
Oh, that's sweet. Okay. I feel as though some of my arcane knowledge has returned to my mind.
Yeah, for a moment there, it's as if you were peering into some sort of extra dimensional vista that was here into this point unlocked, like was locked away from you. But for the briefest of moments, everything came together. You were able to see it.
The stars aligned. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
This will have some sort of terrible, terrible price to pay.
Probably there will be some horrible... thing extracted from me at some point.
You say doom?
I would say doom. In fact, everyone, finish your drink.
This is the point in time where you chug and say doom.
Doom. Dude, your ancient orange meat is really good.
You like it?
Yep.
Thanks, man. I'm digging on my sizer too. My hoppy sizer. It's a little bit light bodied, but I think it's no jokes.
I'm impressed you came over here instead of looking at that book over yonder.
I am keenly excited about this book.
It's just in the middle of the room. It's open.
Is it one of those where, like, you know you're excited about it, but you're going to check the other stuff out first?
Yeah, I'm playing it cool.
Save your favorite thing for last.
Yeah.
I thought I might have left one of my bottles here. You got it? Oh, sweet.
Can I get a beer for me?
Yes.
No, I stuck it back in my bottle.
Awesome.
Bottle box. Awesome, dude.
Those aren't very cold.
Crank.
Reload.
Load it up. I'm still nursing my first two fingers of bourbon over here.
Rip, man. We killed part of a growler, and I've had two glasses of mead, and now I'm going to dig into a high life.
Oh, my God.
But it's lower. These are nominal bits of alcohol.
Tiny bits.
Micro bits of alcohol.
So yeah,
I will, unless these guys want to do something, I want to check out the book.
No, that's fine.
Okay. So in the middle of the room, sort of central to these other three points of interaction that I've mentioned previously, there's a large leather-bound book that looks similar in size and scale to the other book that you have lashed on to the outside of your pack.
Okay.
And it's open. It's a leather bound book that's like sort of splayed open.
Same writing.
So you're going up and you're examining it.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing like with the pages that it's turned to now, the alignments of a couple different configurations of the sphere, the armillary sphere that I mentioned previously.
Mm-hmm.
A couple different alignments there with like the Da Vinci like character sort of like splayed in there. So it's actually showing some various orientations. And there's writing in the runic letters that you recognize as being previously found like within the mirror and within the book and a variety of other places.
Okay. Well, I did get my spell back, so I could read this book.
That would be...
I'm
telling you, man, we need to break this thing down into bits and, like, haul it off for you.
But, like, I don't know.
Pretty obvious that the book goes with the sphere, so, it seems useless to just take that with leaving the sphere here.
It's true.
Unless you can replicate the magic of the sphere somewhere else.
Probably. I mean, if you took the book, maybe it would have some plan for how to build the sphere, but...
We could build a tiny one out of sticks.
Or at the very least, it would render the sphere useless for anybody else that comes along.
It's true. Neutralize that evil. But this is a big book, right? Like, this is a Audubon-style, like, folio thing?
Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
We can lash it to my pack if you'd rather do that.
Because I'm already carrying one of these big hoss books around.
I mean, obviously the dwarf is too small to carry it, but I can carry it for you.
Though he be small, he is fierce.
I kind of pat the dwarf on the head like, it's okay.
Let me look at my spells.
Can I ask again if I understand any of this in my knowledge of the cults of the world?
Yeah, so go ahead and roll 3d6.
3, 1, 5, and 3, 8, 9.
Okay, are either of those under your intelligence or your wisdom?
9 is under my wisdom and my intelligence.
Okay, so yeah, you're looking around here, and Alaric, I mean, you come from the deep dark recesses of the Griff Mountains. The terrible
kind of implies that.
the terrible nature of these lands is something that just sort of is in your blood, right? So you're no stranger to the finer art, I should say, of torture. Like, that's something that your group is well versed in. It's not something that is shied away from. If you all were warring with another clan, you're not one that's going to stop from taking someone and taking a hand or taking an eye or taking a foot. Like, what you need to do to get information, you'll do. And so you recognize the forge that's over to your right-hand side. You're looking at it and you see it's basically a portable forge where you might be able to stoke up some coals, and then adjacent to it, and it's something that wasn't readily recognizable until you started thinking about it, there's almost like a not an autopsy table, but like a shelf that might come out the side where you could like take some tongs immediately from the forge and like apply
and
them.
Brand somebody.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So this is a torture device that allows for you to like easily burn someone while keeping yourself relatively safe. That's what you're seeing here. So that's what you recognize over to one hand, and you look to the other, that weird millstone like tractor tire type obsidian
the like, wheel
that you're seeing here.
Right.
Upon like closer study, it's something that you recognize from your bad old times as a younger dwarf. This is basically the type of mechanism that you might would use to like crush someone alive. It's really like two different millstones that are within a central like axis, and so you're able to sort of spin the dial, and the stone like slowly exerts greater and greater pressure. These are like old school forms of torture that you're familiar with from your times in the Griff Mountains. Like this is shit that maybe your great 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 grandfathers would have been busting out in their in their dwarven halls within the heathen ways of the early years.
Blunt and elegant, but effective.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So these are things that you recognize. There's not necessarily any extra information beyond just recognizing the raw sort of brutality here that's on display, and the fact that this is something that must be just like from the region.
And when we look in the book, are there pictures of people being tortured or any like advice on is it a book on how to torture? Or?
So are you going and looking at the book?
Yeah, I'm going to take a closer glance at it.
Okay, so you walk up and you the preternatural is like studying the pages with like the geometric and the astronomical alignments, and you start like rifling through the pages like over his shoulder, and you like lose his place, but you flip to a couple chapters deeper.
How's he looking over my shoulder?
you're like hunched over, and
okay,
so
got it.
So it's right over your shoulder, and so he's like he's like flipping through, and sure enough, like this entire book is like the user's manual for how to go about using the torture lab. Like that's what you're seeing here. I mean, there is much more information here, and like looking at this book, similar to the Necronomicon that you found, that's something that spanned like large scopes of time and multiple civilizations. You get the sense that this book is something that's been handed down over generations, because you see the transitions, like as you're flipping through, of languages. That runic language is relatively consistent, but you see lots of flavors that are popping up here using the same like methods of pain that we're seeing on display in this room.
Okay.
So I would like to relay this to my friends that we are in some sort of evil torture room that's probably filled with bad juju. And I hope that we haven't interacted with... Do we know that he got his spell back? Like, did he announce that to us?
Oh, yeah. I said knowledge is flooding back into my mind, filling the voids that once were full of magical essence. All my voids are full.
You've just been filled back up. You probably shouldn't have accepted.
It was very passive.
You can't say no, dude.
Yeah.
All that magical juice.
That's my favorite.
I think that a lot of blood was probably spilled to make sure that you could get your spell back.
I'm sorry for that, but I didn't do it. And we have a spell.
Yeah. You don't know. They may not have been evil. They may have been, you know, delightfully neutral.
Frightfully neutral.
I don't know.
For the preternatural and Alaric, that statement is that's a telling statement in terms of the alignment of your character versus that character.
Yeah. I don't track with that, no. But I'm looking at the scroll that I've been sort of jotting down a rough outline of a floor plan here as we stand here considering this horrible room. And I don't see... There must be, I mean, maybe this is it. Maybe I don't see any
the flu.
well,
we could try playing the music and the piano, see what happens.
That's true. Maybe that's the thing to do.
I bet it's magical.
And there are no other means of egress from this room.
So you shine your torch around the room, and no, this is outside of the accoutrements that I've just mentioned, as well as a variety of like locking points along the walls where you might be able to chain someone up, it's bare of other items. There's not personal effects in here, nor are there like small items. It's just those main items.
I mean, it certainly makes sense to only have one exit or entrance to your torture chamber, because like you don't want your prisoners getting out.
Yeah, but you're using fire and flame. Like, this is a clear OSHA violation.
You're saying there needs to be multiple ways to exit.
Yeah, and these doors, I'm not sure about. Like, we've pushed them all in.
They're not up to code.
Yeah, nope, not up to code. Mm. Death cult. Sorry, I'm going to have to write you a fine.
Maybe they have an exemption in the back of this torture manual that you found so interesting.
It's true. Maybe they are exempt.
So we're going to go back to the piano. Is that what I'm hearing?
I guess that's the thing. Aside from
the flu, there doesn't seem to be much else to do except wait for these skulls to keep crashing. We should also probably check on those.
Yeah, maybe.
Excellent point. We had almost forgotten about the giant ice crystal skull things that are falling.
We haven't really heard anything fall.
No, but we're kind of like back here in this room.
It's
true. You may not be able to hear them.
Yeah.
I will begin the procession back.
Okay. I am going to lash this big old torture book to my pack. Much to my companion's chagrin, I imagine.
You can bring it. Maybe it will fetch some gold pieces.
Hey, people are into weird shit. You don't know.
I do. That he wants to take this with us.
I do know that people are into weird shit. I work in a very strange shop.
I need to make my jingle. So
Gregory the Preternatural Furry.
So you're taking the book with you. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's take the book.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So Alaric, are you going back down the hallway? Is that right?
Yeah. I'll lead us back that way. What is that god awful noise?
It's something down the path.
Alaric, sorry, I jacked that up. I was hoping that would be more useful than it was.
It sounded like skeletons, like bones. Are there skeletons?
There's two skeletons.
Something.
No. Two skeletons are in front of you and they're boning. No. All right, we're gonna play this cool.
You want to do it again? I can take it from the
top. It's like some rough stuff. Like skeletons are just like...
I am a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah. I would be curious how skeletons would do that.
They would bone?
I'll send you a picture.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard the term dry hump? But a bump bump. Okay, so coming back in cold.
You could just bleep that out or put it at the very end. It's okay.
How tasteless.
Alaric, so you're coming down the hallway. You're leading the party. You have the illuminescence of the torches over your shoulders, and you're heading back south towards the main chapel. When you are here,
seem to be interested in the piano.
The crashing of one of these ice skulls. You hear like falling to the floor in front of you, like right as you enter the main chapel chamber.
How many are left hanging?
There were 10 of the ice skulls to begin with, and yes. Now there are only 2.
There are only 2 left.
Well, let's bang out this music real quick.
You know how to play?
No, I thought the dwarf did.
Dwarf?
I'll tickle the ivories.
Tinkle, tinkle, tinkle.
Piano man. Piano dwarf. Play me a song, okay. Piano dwarf.
So just to reiterate, this is a relatively large... chapel.
Yes.
You're coming into this room and sort of on your left and deep within, it's the main like congregational area. So there's these like stone seats that are all arrayed, and there's a lot. Like there's probably 40 or 50 different pews that are displayed. In the center, sort of like down the main thoroughfare straight ahead and then like crossways that would be leading up to the main pulpit, there's the circle of ice skulls that I mentioned before. And as I've said, the chains that have been like tinkling and like holding these ice skulls, there's 8 chains that are bare and 2 ice skulls that still jingle and dangle. The player piano, the bone piano, that's made out of aurochs and human bones is on sort of the left area of the pulpit. I think you guys investigated the pulpit, and it's like this open area and a maw of like a demon skull. And from what I recalled, I have down here marked that Brazon investigated that main sort of pulpit altar area. And did you look inside of it, like the mouth of it?
We fished out a, I think, a ruby necklace.
There you go. Okay, yeah. Okay. So you have that, Brazon, you have that ruby necklace and a jewel-encrusted dagger on your person.
Okay.
I've got the ruby locket, and Gregory, I believe, has the dagger. Isn't it in your pack?
I thought you took them both, but...
I have here underlined Brazon, double underlines.
Okay. Cool. Well, that must make it important. I will add it to my thing.
Okay. So you have both the ruby locket as well as the dagger. So those are at the demon's fanged mouth. Like there's an altar, like the tongue is a bowl. And in that were those various like treasures. So you took that, and then... it's a little bit darker on the far wall of the chapel, but regardless, you're going to the piano, which is immediately to your left. So just to reiterate, like there's the skulls that are falling from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. There's the open fanged maw of the altar slash demon mouth. There's the bone piano, and then there's like the southern reach of the chapel that you haven't really looked at.
Okay. We also got something out of the piano, out of the organ.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So you were poking around and plinking and tinking away on the piano previously. And I have here that Alaric was able to recover a...
I think it's another necklace.
Was it?
Yeah, I thought that was a locket.
Okay.
There were two necklaces, and I believe they were both
ruby-esque.
Like they were encrusted in rubies or had rubies on them, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Here it is. Yeah. So the other one was like a sapphire locket.
Okay. That's from the organ. That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So at this point, Brazon has recovered two different like lockets within this room. From jacking around with things, both at the altar and with the piano, using science terms.
I know. Rich. But in my immature mind, never mind how he got those items. So you know how to read music, Brazon?
Oh, I don't. I thought.
Alaric, you can.
Alaric did.
Okay.
I can hash it out a little bit.
Okay.
So you're going to go up and tickle the ivory, as you said?
That's what I'm going to do.
Play me a song, O Piano Dwarf. I'm going to repeat that joke because it's a good one.
Just in case it fell flat with the listeners the first time.
Yeah. They don't like my jokes.
We got mad jokes. Okay.
So Alaric.
I put my hands up on there and I kind of test it, see if it's in tune a little bit. And to the best of my ability, which is not the best ability, I tinkle out this song.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, so it's, you know, like the first instances of Brazon, like, plunking away, they were relatively... No. Previously, with Brazon, like, jacking around with it, they were relatively dry... tones, like muted clinks and plinks. And so now whenever Alaric comes along, they're still a little bit coarse, and there's not necessarily like the tune that plays through there. So you have to really like I'm thinking of the Charlie Brown like Christmas episode where
Schroeder
is like playing like jingle bells like ding ding ding, like that's how it's coming through until you get like the pure tones, and so tink tink tink, and finally it starts to come through and you're able to piece together a couple of those different chords, and really you only need to play like three or four in sequence before you feel like some weird psychic juju washing over you.
So
Alaric, you kind of go on a short little trip. Basically, you're transported, like you quickly leave your body, like your head, like imagine if you will your perspective sort of zip out of the top of your head and sort of quickly in like Sam Raimi style, like Army of Darkness, rather than going forward at some exponential speed, you sort of zip out at a very quick rate. Up through the portal that you guys descended into this dungeon, outside of the cabin, and then quickly you're sort of like rotating around the large graveyard that you previously were walking through, right, as you approach the cabin in the woods up here on the top of the mountain. And it's quiet and it's daylight, but there's a strange sense of foreboding that rests over you. You get the sense that all of those dead individuals that are under the ground still sleep.
That's good.
Yeah.
Do we see him like react in any way?
You see his eyes like roll back in his head, and he like tink tink tink, and then he sort of is like falling back, and he's not like convulsing or like in a palsy or anything. It's just as if he's not there. It's as if he's at the moment of climax, or like he fell asleep for just a split second, and then and very well, quick
he was
and then,
jacking around with it.
So. He was jacking around, and then very quickly you come back out of this, Alaric, and you're back at the piano.
Guys, I saw the graveyard. I relay the whole story to them.
Okay.
What can this mean?
You guys consider it.
I'll consider this on the Tree of Woe.
If it means that they're still asleep, that means that they could wake up.
Well, yeah. And I betcha the skulls falling from the chains are counting down until the undead start rising.
Well, let's get back up that ladder then.
Are we safer down here or would we be safer up there?
I don't know. I don't think we're going to make it out of this one, you guys.
Mm. Well, to be fair, down here, if nothing is down here with us, we've got hallways. You're only facing the two ahead of you.
I have an idea.
Lay it on us.
I wonder if we explored things backwards, and I wonder if we should have found the necklace in the organ first. I wonder if we were supposed to make an offering in there. What I'd like to do is take... So we dropped that sapphire necklace into a small pouch, and then we put it into my backpack.
Oh, right.
I want to take it out of my backpack, uh-huh, and then pour it out of... at some point after we're done playing the piano, I want to drop that necklace back into the bowl and see what happens.
So you get the ruby necklace that was packed away, mm-hmm, out of your pouch, and you drop it back into the mouth of the fang skull, the altar, and it clunk, it sort of like falls down there, and it just sits.
I wanted something to click or something.
No.
That happens. Okay. After waiting a few minutes,
okay,
I'll fish it back out of there and put it back in the pouch.
Okay. So you fish it back out with your dagger, you drop it in the pouch, and then you've got it. Okay, so you guys are at this altar, all three of you?
Presumably.
Yeah, so lights are sort of jangling and dangling around this central point. This is like the main thoroughfare. You've got the pews on the left, the pews on the right. Again, you have the final two skulls that are sort of dangling from the iron chains above you. This is the entrance, the area that you came from immediately to your right. There's the main entrance that you came from with the double doors that are straight ahead. And then again, on the left-hand side, there's pews that are there. And from your vantage here, you can see almost as if it's like a hand washing station, like coming out of the wall.
Okay. Did you not notice that before?
No, you weren't at a position where, like, you guys haven't been this far over, and like,
it's more southern.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay. It's the side of the chapel that you haven't yet investigated.
I don't know how this is supposed to be, but I've drawn it like a T.
That's exactly that's over right. On yeah, its yeah, side. Yeah, yeah. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
So you've investigated like the uphand portion and the side portion, but down here,
but not the down.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Exactly right. Yeah.
All
right.
Cool. Let's go down there. I didn't. Well, I thought we had covered this room.
Mm-mm.
Cool.
I mean, we're not going to make it out of this thing before all the skulls drop, so we might as well just press on.
I've got mighty magics.
Make like Lee nails.
And press on. Press on.
I knew this guy that I work with. That's what he would used to say.
He's make like Lee nails.
And just press on. And
press on.
That was bad.
But no, it's great.
I didn't say that. Austin did.
Are Lee nails still a thing?
Austin from Nacogdoches, Texas would say that.
Howdy.
Shit. Yeah.
Howdy, Austin.
I hope he's listening.
I hope so.
I hope so too. He was a good guy. I liked him a lot. He and I used to eat like a Subway sandwich and like watch a bat roost. Summer of 2003. That summer, it was a good summer.
That was your first
15 years
summer.
Ago.
That was
right. Or your senior year?
No, that was when I was an undergrad. Like that was my summer before I started my graduate work.
Okay.
Yeah. Lots of high lives that summer. It was the summer of high lives.
This has been the winter of high lives for me.
It's been, they're good, dude.
It's the champagne and beer.
Champagne. Okay, so you make your way to the southern reaches of the chapel, and what is revealed there are a couple different basins. So on the south end of the altar, across the doorway, there are two basins that are built into the walls. And they seem to be filled with a blackened, unholy water. It's hard to see anything beyond the reflections and the flickering of the torchlight until you get closer. And that's what you see.
Hmm.
Okay, now, the torture devices may have been pretty neutral, but this is obviously evil.
Your judgment is, like, right on. It's right on. What do you think, Alaric?
I think we're messing with things beyond our ken, but does it burn?
Are you approaching?
Yeah, I'll look at the water.
Okay. So you approach, and your buddies are sort of following a few steps behind. And so as they do, there's a door that's revealed immediately to your left. The door itself doesn't have any sort of like handle or means of opening. It's more or less like a stone blocking within like the arch of a doorway that's right mm-hmm. there. So that's yeah. immediately to your left, and there's these two basins. As you get closer and as you peer within the inky water, at least one of the basins, the one that you come to closest, you begin to see a variety of like pearlish white features in the bottom of the basin.
Okay, so far, torture device, mask with teeth in it, rubies, lots of different things that this could be.
Pearly whites. I bet it's
pearly
teeth.
Whites, possibly. Did we say before that the mask gave Berzon some sort of weird vision?
No, he put it on and it did not. I mean, he was acting a fool, but there was no like strange trips that you went on.
I can test that.
I don't know if you're acting a fool. Maybe that was a little bit much on my part.
That was harsh.
That was a little bit harsh. I'm sorry.
I'm very offended.
Are you prepared to act a fool right now?
I was going to ask, can I, as a priest or a cleric, do I know that this is unholy water? Is that a thing that I can determine? Like, presumably I know what holy water looks like.
I mean, it is definitely water within, like, a sacramental altar of some sort. I mean, Marzahn is not exactly a good goddess. She's not exactly a bad goddess. She's just the goddess of death within the Northlands. She's that sort of autumnal statement on the grand scheme of things.
Kind of like with the hands, though. Like, death is what it is. It's not good or bad, but like raising the dead and the undead are unholy and not good. So. Like, yeah. I get. Could I look at this black not water? Good. Like, can I get? Can I like try to cleanse it with my holy symbol or something?
Yeah, you can try. Yeah, do you wanna try to do that? How are you going to how are you gonna cleanse?
I'm gonna take my holy symbol and I'm gonna like say some kind of cleansing prayer over the water and then dip the holy symbol into it.
Okay, so you're doing that. You're praying. And you exert some of your deific forces into the water there. And so as you break the water, it sort of like ripples. And for a split second, you see, like a small, like lock box, like something that I guess you would say is like, think about like the smallest of jewelry boxes or those types of like a little clamshell box where you might have like a wedding ring embedded. Okay. Something of that size. But it's a small hinged box that's like at the base of the water, like as you're sort of like exerting your powers of Mirzana on this, it becomes visible for a split second.
Do the waters clear or anything?
It's more as if you've like broken the surface tension and the reflection of this this black water and the black sort of like basin, and you see it. And maybe it's some consequence of the power of your prayer that made it like something you can see. But now you can see it amidst the various like molars and premolars that are like resting on the bottom of this basin, roots and all.
Well, go for broke. I'm gonna reach in. I'm gonna like kind of as the whole. I'm gonna drop the holy symbol in and like just kind of follow it with my hand and like keep the holy symbol chain and like my pinky or two fingers and grab the locket with my other fingers.
Okay, so you pull it out. So this is a small hinged box that's on like a golden chain, so you found yet another locket. And this is it's like walnut sized. It's like I said, it's the size that you would have like a wedding ring or like a relatively large like mocker nut, hickory nut, like or a walnut, like something like that. That's the size that we're talking about here. But it's something that is relatively cubish in shape but has a golden chain on it.
Does it open? Is it a true locket?
Sure, yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm already touching it. I might as well open it.
Okay, so you pop this thing open, and you see, like, within it a bit of, like, soapstone that's been carved within the visage of a man.
Oh. Do I recognize the man?
No.
He's your father.
I'm going to say...
His name is Stick Man.
Dwarf, you know the cults.
Sure, I'll take a good look.
Is it missing an eye and a left arm or a left hand?
No.
Okay. It's just a leitmotif that has been sort of emerging now and then.
Yersh.
Well, and you as an arcanist may have recognized that.
I'll look at it.
One more skull. That,
one of the skulls. Drops to the floor and shatters behind you. There's a single skull that's slowly, like
a single skull remains.
So that's what you see. And within this basin, then also are the various teeth that I mentioned. There's another basin. It looks like to the right.
Let's look in there. Maybe there are more treasures.
Okay. So you sort of waft your lantern light over between these basins, and there's like a stone that's inset between the two basins, and there's like a runic verse that's like inscribed in between the two.
That was me wafting my light. Sorry.
It worked well. I felt it.
I don't know what it says, but I could use a spell. I've got read magic. I've got.
I mean, I've already gone for broken, like put my hand in it. So
that's true. Are you going to put your hand in this one?
If my arm melts off tomorrow, we'll know.
I think you should start using your left hand for a lot of reasons.
You see the runic verse that's like chiseled into the stone in between these two basins, and also to the immediate right of the second basin, you see a large mural, and you don't necessarily see what's included there, but the overall color and just hue seems to match the mural that you saw topside in the cabin.
Hmm. Did we all three go at the same time?
Feel like we did.
Yeah.
So the mural on the top side, help me remember that one a little bit
better. That one was there, like, we were in it, and there was a skull, a skeleton that I think was in the style of Vecna. Like, it was missing a hand and missing an eye, and we were, I don't know, I remember there was, like, a throne or something. Like, it was a very royal, very regal kind of depiction.
I think I was the only one that looked happy because I had a big old flaming sword.
Everybody else kind of looked all right. Yep. So you're going to find your sword.
Have we seen any images of Marzana in any of this?
That's a good question. I don't think so. Like, there haven't been any left hand, or sorry, there haven't been any, her symbol is the crescent moon, right? Like the setting sun or.
Yeah. Like the Omega.
Yeah.
That's right. No,
we haven't seen that.
I feel her presence all around us.
I feel nothing but the prospect of death or riches.
Okay, so we've just seen a big mural. We've touched some teeth in a bowl.
I mean, you haven't seen the mural.
No, we know it's there. All. Yeah, I want to look at it.
Okay, Let us gaze upon it in its glory.
I'll say, look, guys, a mural, and I'll hold my torch up.
Okay, so all of y'all walk up to said mural. This thing's of relatively similar size to the previous one in that it's an arm's breadth wide and half as tall. So it's more of like a landscape versus like a portrait. And this is a very elaborate vista. Like what you're seeing here is different than the other one because there's far more material here to digest. There's more symbols, there's more activity going on. So what you're seeing here is in the center there is a fellow with the cowl drawn over. I say a fellow. I mean, it could be a woman, right? But this is an imposing figure with his hands outstretched, but yet the left one is missing and the face is hidden. And so this primordial demon creature is standing and holding sort of a sway over the entirety of the landscape. So on one side, you sort of see the various feminine representations of witchcraft. Here you see multitudes of women hanging from trees that are just like their boughs are splayed open, and there's materials that are splayed all about the grounds of the withered trees that they're hanging from. On the other side, it's more of a scene of war. You have various pikes that are erected and men that are like sliding down said pikes. And at the bottom, it seems as if there's a variety of statements, and it's almost as if those runes are written across the entirety of this landscape.
Huh.
Ominous.
And it's an Iron Maiden tour poster.
it's more horrific than that for sure, but it's pretty raunchy. The keeper of the various lockets, that is Alaric, right? You recovered materials previously that seemed to sort of like burn, not necessarily in your hand, but you get a sense that there's like a pulling, like a magnetism that's within your backpack, or perhaps within one of your purses that are at your side, where you have a locket stowed towards a specific witch hanging from a tree there. And you don't necessarily know who this woman is, but you feel some sort of kinship between the person on the painting versus like whatever is held in your pack.
Huh. Well.
Are we compelled to take those items and offer them to the mural or move them toward the mural? Or is it just we can feel the pull?
So two things. One, like, you don't necessarily feel these things. Alaric is feeling like the pulse, like the pull from his backpack. But in that question, he doesn't necessarily feel the need to like present anything. It's as if there's some sort of north-south polar attraction between what's in his pack versus what's on the wall.
Got it. Okay.
Well, I'll get a locket out and like press it up against the mural.
It feels as if you have some sort of psychic connection with the mural there, but it's not like it sticks to a magnet to the refrigerator or anything.
Huh. Put the locket back. I say we burn the mural. Bad juju.
This guy's answer to everything is fire.
He likes to burn it all. What is in, while he's thinking about burning this mural, I want to go back and consider the second font.
So, yeah.
Like the it's like a basin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we haven't really looked at.
So there's something that's just there, like sort of in between the two basins is like a statement. There's like a single word.
Hmm. But we can't read it.
No. It's again in the runes that you've seen previously.
Right.
And we know that the mural is static. Like if we look at it individually, it doesn't change.
That's correct. It stays constant.
Okay.
So I want to look in the second basin.
There's way more teeth.
That's all I see.
It's a lot of them.
You can make more of these death cult masks. Give you guys one each, and then we can have a party.
It's true.
Is he becoming unhinged?
Who, Luke?
No.
I don't think so. Berzon, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think he's acting much different than he has been in the past. Like,
I'm just trying to fit in, guys. Jeez.
He wants to have friends.
And I don't know how to do it because I'm like he doesn't a teenager. I'll just say
here's an idea. Like I have an idea. What if we take that mask that you found and pry some of the teeth out of it and put them in this basin?
Oh, maybe we should do the detect magic first on all this stuff that we have just to make sure we're not ruining it.
Oh, well, let me see.
Don't you have that?
I think I might.
No, I don't.
I have analyze, I have light, I have read magic, magic missile, and then I have knock.
Oh, that's useful.
Yeah.
Because didn't you want to like gather a bunch of things up and then do them all at the same time?
I do. Analyze, I think, will tell me the properties of items. So detect magic is a different spell. Okay. But I think analyze should. I'll look it up. Actually, I don't have my freaking book again.
Wait, no. We have the...
I've got the electronic copy. Big old
stone over the doorway. We could try moving that if we're at a loss for things to do.
Yeah. So we were thinking, what if we take that mask that Berzon has in his pack and pry the teeth out of it and drop them in this basin?
Sure.
What happens? So I'm going to do that.
Okay. How many teeth are you putting in it?
I'm going to put... How many teeth are in the mask? Like 10, 12? Or a whole, like...
There are 9 teeth in the mask.
9. So I want to put 3 in.
Okay.
So I drop 3 teeth into the basin on the right.
Yep, so you do that, and then the bronze door that's immediately to your left opens. So, like slides to the side.
Okay.
Oh, save me the effort.
Well,
good. What happens if I pry 3 more out and put them in the one the other basin that also had teeth in it.
Don't make it close.
Nothing.
You do that and nothing happens.
Okay. I was just wondering. We have three more teeth in your mask. In case there are any more dental puzzles that we have to solve.
Alright, let's go through the portal.
I need another piece of graph paper.
Nice.
Citricola scales. Working on some bug picks.
So the bronze door opens. You can hear some sort of claw, like you can hear a cog like mechanism as the door slides open, and as it does that, the keening otherworldly noise that you had been hearing before becomes even louder. It's as if the violinist is in the room next door and is just like screeching and squalling away.
I really wish he was better at this.
I'm worried that this door is going to slam shut if we go in there. Do any of you have anything we could like prop it open with?
We could bring it. I wonder if we could drag over one of those benches. Just kind of wedge
it. Is there any way I could use a rope to lash it open?
No, and no. The benches are actually like stone pews that are hewn out of the ground, and it would be hard for you to get a single rope. I guess, Alaric, in response to your question, you could go over to the open, like, maw of the altar, like the altar where you fished out, like, the locket and the dagger out of its mouth and, like, lash something there. But it would take maybe 100 feet of rope, because it would take, like, 40 or 50 feet of rope just to sort of, like, cover the distance. But honestly, okay. Like, your character recognizes that if the bronze door, like, the weight of it was traveling, it would just, like, against the tension of, like, just that single rope, it would pull it tight.
What about a short sword as a doorstop?
That would be far more effective.
I have a short sword. I would offer it up as a doorstop, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I do that.
Tweet. That'll help. That makes me feel better.
Okay, so you, Alaric, take your short sword, and you go up against where the bronze door is, like, sort of fit into the stonework, and you're what, like, sort of, like, pounding and wedging it in?
Yeah, I'm wedging it underneath the door where it meets the floor.
Okay.
Easily and I'm done. Hoping that the hilt is enough to be a doorstop.
All right. This is a good stopping point, then, because let me describe what you see. So you come through the bronze cogwork door that opens, and essentially in front of you, essentially in front of you, you see with your torch.
Someone's being noisy.
Stop. Just stop moving. I'm going to, like, finish this shit.
Sorry.
So you hold your torch in front of you, and essentially you see opening up in front of you a honeycomb of crypts. Mm-hmm. And to your left, you see an alcove that seems to be endless in the distance that it spans. Thank you.
Thank you.